From the City of Angels, near the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be, across the nation, around the world, I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Later on tonight, lucid dreaming. Here's what's happening. Well, the first presidential debate of this campaign, now in the history books, but police on Long Island say about 2,000 protesters gathered outside the scene of the first presidential debate between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump. Nassau County police say about 24 people have been arrested on mostly disorderly conduct charges. Our iHeart reporter, Alice Stockton Rossini, out there at the scene. Alice, can you tell us what's going on right now?
Right now, it's very quiet. Very, very quiet. People got out of here really fast. You should have seen them run. There were a bunch of people outside at viewing parties. You know, there were parties inside, outside, you know, kind of gathered around the TV stations that had big screen TVs. And it started to rain. Like, just before the debate ended, it started to rain, and people were just out of here.
So the 24 people arrested, Alice, pretty peaceful, generally. It was just a little disorderly conduct, I guess.
Very loud. It was a bunch of loud protests. I mean, they were protesting Obama get out of Haiti, Britney Spears for president, Jill Stein, she got led away. She showed up on campus, and they escorted her off. We had the people fighting for $15 an hour, Planned Parenthood. It was just this kind of a conglomeration of protesters. Pretty much the same thing we saw in Cleveland during the RNC, in Philly during the DNC, just kind of everybody coming out of the woodwork to, you know, make their feelings known. But, I mean, they were expecting 10,000. We got two.
That's
okay,
it.
And they had to gather at a certain area that was pretty far away from the debate center, and then they kind of gathered outside the perimeter of the Mac Arena, far, far away from where either presidential contender could even hear them, let alone see them. But, they were pretty loud, pretty loud. And then on campus, outside the student center, there would be, like, pop-up debates. All of a sudden, two students would be arguing loudly, and then, you know, a crowd would gather, and then they'd start hearing cheers, you know, bring down the wall, bring down the wall, and, you know, reproductive rights, and who's going to pay my tuition, and those kinds of things were kind of happening on campus. But, you know, outside of being kind of loud, which you would expect, because this is a democracy, you're allowed to do
that.
That's
right.
Not violent at all. Not at all.
Well, that's good. Alice, thanks for staying up there, out there for us. Really appreciate
it.
Okay, we'll check in. And, of course, the next debate's going to be in my hometown of St. Louis at Washington University in a couple of weeks. So we'll have reports. That'll be on a Sunday, I believe. Sunday, indeed. Well, I had a chance to watch the debate. It's very interesting. First of all, most of the polls, unscientific polls, Times, Drudge Report, CBS News, ABC, most of the unscientific polls that are people that are, you know, dialing in via the internet shows that Donald Trump won, according to those polls. CNN, of course, shows that Hillary won. Now, Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton, in a very fiery opening debate, which seemingly nothing was off limits, clashed sharply as the Republican nominee worked to cast his rival as a career politician, unable to bring change. And, of course, the Democratic nominee fought to tag Trump as an empty suit, hiding something from the American public, his taxes. Entering their first encounter after this solid week of intensive preparation, Clinton seemed ready for several of Trump's taunts on stage at the Hofstra University in New York. Hillary did appear polished. Donald seemed real. Let's check in with Dr. John Curtis. He's been with us during this entire campaign. And, of course, John, safe to say that you lean toward Trump, right?
Well, it's not really safe to say that because I do write political neutral commentary. So I'm giving you straight up what my perception is.
No bias in this report. Go ahead.
No, I don't think so. And you know, you'll see my analysis here. I think fits with the politically neutral crowd. I would say that, you know, that the expectations going into the debate, George, were enormous. So I'm talking about 100 million viewers. You're talking about a major title fight sort of atmosphere. And the general expectation was that Hillary, the far more experienced, studious career politician was going to blow him out of the water. It's going to expose that he's a fraud, a fake, and a huckster, and he wouldn't be able to be on the same stage as her. Well, that's completely over now. And while it's the first go-around for Trump in a one-to-one debate, because remember, the Republicans were debating with multiple folks on stage of the time, this performance by Trump to go toe-to-toe with Hillary, and even though there were times when there was a little bit of impatience in the format.
And a little nervousness.
And he did interrupt her a few times. She interrupted him. That in spite of all that, he got through this without any major gaffe. And what she was trying to do today is to stem his momentum. A poll just before the debate had gone on in Minnesota shows that Trump is even with her in Minnesota. If he's even in a liberal blue state like Minnesota, she is in trouble. And I think what the debate showed, and Trump was, you know, had a great line as she was pressing him on the tax, his tax returns, and he said, "Look, I'm willing to release my tax returns if you release the 33,000 emails that you had deleted from your son." So that was a good rejoinder on his part. And I think what you're looking at is that the Clinton campaign, no matter how they spin this, this was not a good result for them because they expected essentially a knockout punch. They didn't get it. And the next debate, they have to be very nervous in the Clinton campaign because what Trump witnessed in this debate, and he tried to present a lot of decorum and act presidential and then realized at a certain point, this woman is going to rip my throat out. She's going for the jugular. And so he appeared at times a little bit on the defensive because she was very well staged and very polished because those lines of hers are memorized.
Well, he looked like, John, he didn't know quite what she was going to jump at him with.
He didn't. But think about this. He now knows that he can go toe-to-toe with Hillary Clinton.
And we're going to see what happens on the next debate. John, thank you so much. OnlineColumnist.com is John's website to read his commentary. And, of course, Howard Bloom has been with us for the campaign. Now, Howard, is it safe to say that you lean toward Hillary?
I not only lean toward Hillary, I loathe Donald Trump.
So all right.
It's not surprising.
Put it out front.
John and I have very different views on this. Look, James Fallows of The Atlantic wrote an article last week, and he recommended watching the debate with the sound off. Why? Because he wanted you to watch for body language. He pointed out that people way back when listening to JFK debating Richard Nixon, who heard it on the radio, who didn't see it on television, were absolutely certain that Richard Nixon had won.
That's right.
But Nixon actually lost because of the visuals. Okay, so what were the visuals tonight? It was all in the body language. It all started with the split screen. Now, look, tons of research demonstrates that every time a 6'2" candidate goes up against a 6'4" candidate, the taller person always wins. But with this split screen, it made Hillary look as tall as, and in some ways somehow bigger than, Donald Trump. Then there was another killer, the positioning of the microphones. Trump's microphone was lower than the knot on his tie, and he had to stoop in order to speak. Every single word. It made him look like a cringing child. He's used to taking the stage, standing up straight, and dominating the scene. But he's terrible when he has to listen, and the camera won't leave his face. And it never left his face once. He looks restless. He looks peevish. He looks petulant. He looks like a husband being henpecked by his wife. Meantime, Hillary's mic was at the height of her chin, so she could stand ramrod straight and look authoritative, tough, cool, and sometimes even, at the very end, presidential. So while Trump's face was wriggling, hers was totally under control. She looked either serious or she had a smile, and not just any smile, usually a smile of command. So the Fox News team, who are often Trump's biggest supporters, although they do occasionally criticize him, said this. Megyn Kelly pointed out that there was a gasp in the audience when Trump claimed that he had done Barack Obama a favor by forcing him to release his birth certificate. Britt Hume of Fox TV spotted the visual thing, and he said the two faces that counted the most tonight were the faces Trump and Clinton made when they were not talking. That's the wriggling, squirming face of Donald Trump. said Hume, Clinton looked composed or even smug, but Trump looked uncomfortable.
In spite of this, Howard, though, in spite of all of this, these very unscientific polls tonight after the debate shows that Trump generally beat Hillary. What do you think?
Well, it remains to be seen tomorrow, because or even later tonight. The only poll that I've seen is the CNN poll. Look, Hillary went in with a 3 to 3.5 point lead, depending on whether you're looking at the average of 138 polls or something of the sort put together by Huffington Post or the New York Times. Dana Perino said that Trump was on his heels. Fox News commentator Judge Andrew Napolitano, you have seen him on Fox TV. He hates Democrats. He chews them to pieces. He said, quote, Hillary Clinton was poised, charming, intelligent, and for the first time, likable. The only guy who came out against this was Newt Gingrich, who said this was an enormous, historic victory for Trump.
Well, I got to tell you, the guy who goes down the middle of the road, me, not for Trump, not for Hillary, just looking right down the middle of the road, she seemed to be more polished tonight. He was a little unsure of himself, a little unsteady. But we shall see what happens in the next couple debates. And you know what? It's November 8th. That's what counts. Howard, thank you so much. Violent crime across the United States jumped in 2015 after 2 years of declines, adding that the number of murders reported by local law enforcement agencies up nearly 11% from 2014. Tense moments in Houston, at least 9 people injured when a gunman wearing an old military uniform and armed with thousands of rounds of ammunition opened fire in Houston on Monday morning. Police also seen removing what appeared to be an item with a swastika on it from the suspect's car. Police killed the gunman after he began shooting randomly at people all over the place. The acting Houston police chief said that the suspect was a lawyer who was having issues with his law firm. Police in eastern Pennsylvania are trying to figure out who stabbed a 16-year-old to death during a fight that broke out after a person showed up wearing a clown mask. Authorities said the incident happened late Sunday night in Reading, Pennsylvania. And they're also warning people this Halloween, which is coming up, to be kind of on the watch for people wearing these kinds of clown outfits. In the Chicago area, authorities are conducting a death investigation after a severed head was discovered in Chicago's McKinley Park Lagoon. A man working at the lagoon made the discovery. The groundskeeper was working to clean trash and found a bag holding the severed human head near the lagoon. Further evidence has been obtained to show that Jupiter's icy moon Europa throws jets of water out into space. Another exciting story, Dr. Sky.
Absolutely, George. The discoveries just keep coming in one after another. But as our previous friends and contributors to Coast Air, folks, if you've had your fill of politics for the evening, don't forget that Elon Musk of SpaceX is going to move us skyward. George is making a great presentation tomorrow. He's doing this presentation at the 67th International Astronautical Conference in Mexico on how we are going to get off the planet Earth and move to Mars. It's called the Multiplanetary Plan. And his goal, of course, and it's in quotes, making humans an interplanetary species. He's also going to identify and reveal, after a successful test on September the 25th, of some brand new heavy lift engines. And this is exciting for space fans. They're known as Raptor engines. And these engines, that is, which will be used on this heavy lift rocket of the future, will be propelled by liquid methane and liquid oxygen. And also for a reason, on the surface of Mars, we find that methane is a simple hydrocarbon, of course, and we could actually produce it on the surface of Mars for a replenishable source of fuel. Now, we all know that SpaceX was started back in 2002 to lower the cost of launching payloads into space, but it's exciting. So if you want to follow what Elon Musk is doing, SpaceX.com will have a broadcast, George, 2:30 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, and we're now seeing some real great science, in my opinion. But George, in the live sky view, we don't talk about visible man-made satellites that often. And the Chinese space station Tiangong 2 has been reported now, the Chinese, that is, the space agency there, seemingly has lost control of this particular vehicle, stating that it's probably going to deorbit sometime in 2017. But if there's a Tiangong 1, they've just launched another object called Tiangong 2, of course, on September the 15th. And here's what I'd like to mention to the Coast audience. go to drsky.com, look on the left side of the website for satellite locator. And George, I follow this Tiangong 1, as I'm sure many people do, and so many other satellites. You can actually see these with the naked eye, traveling at 17,000 miles an hour. Simply, Dr. Sky reminds you, always remember to keep your eyes to the skies.
Thank you, Stephen. Zika, what is this virus anyway? It keeps changing. Does it really create neurological problems with children? Does it really break down the immune system? Up next, John Rappaport. I promised you he'd be back, and he is, for the next couple hours on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, welcome back to Coast. George Norrie with you, along with John Rappaport. John, of course, is widely regarded as one of the most important investigative medical reporters in the world. He has worked in this area for 30-plus years, written a number of books, including The Ownership of All Life, and here he is to talk about Zika, and we'll get into some other situations as well, but the Zika virus still seems to be on everybody's tongues these days, John. Welcome back.
Good to be here, George.
Give us the official version's definition of Zika first, would you?
Sure. It's a virus. It's been around. It was discovered in 1947. It's now being accused of causing a birth defect called microcephaly in babies, which means smaller heads, neurological damage, and it gained that reputation, if you will, in Brazil last year, where authorities reported a probable spike in cases of this birth defect. The mechanics of how this virus is supposed to be producing this effect are speculative and so forth, and there have been studies done and so forth, but the World Health Organization and the CDC, the usual suspects here, have taken off yet once again, promoting this as very dangerous for the entire planet, rushing to create a vaccine, and this is the story that they are sticking with.
And it's apparently passed on to mothers who are pregnant from a mosquito, right?
That's right. It's carried by a mosquito, and therefore mosquitoes must die. They have to be killed in some way, spraying them or releasing genetically engineered mosquitoes that will reduce the population by giving birth, well, not actually giving birth at all, impregnating female mosquitoes. And then the children don't pass through the larval stage, and thereby the population is reduced. That's that story.
In their opinion, John, why would this virus kind of pop up all of a sudden?
Well, that's the mystery, and that sort of opens the dark side of the story, because they have no explanation. The virus has been known, as I have said, since 1947, never known to cause anything serious, mild, transient illness at best.
Fevers.
A little bit of fever goes away, no problem. And now all of a sudden, boom. And so if you ask them, they really have no answer. They're just asserting, but now it's causing something much more dire.
And it's panicking the world, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Panicking the world. Women postponing pregnancies. Travel advisories. Don't go to the following countries if you are pregnant or thinking about getting pregnant. In fact, in Central America, and this story was reported, I'm going to say 8 months ago, and then it just died, there are boats that women who are pregnant can get on. And they go out to sea and they have abortions, because in certain countries the abortions are restricted or even illegal. And so this hysteria built to the point where women go out in these ships beyond the three-mile limit. They're given a chemical. It aborts the child. They come back, and that child is never born.
John, stay with us. We had a lot of news tonight. We're going to come back and continue chatting with you about this business of Zika. We're going to get into your thoughts on what you think is going on and why people are indeed coming down with some of these birth defects. So much more. John Rappaport, our special guest. We will take phone calls next hour with John as well. His website's nomorefakenews.com, linked up at coasttocoastam.com. More in a moment, right here on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back with John Rappaport as we talk about the Zika virus. So, John, the Zika virus does exist. The question is, what does it really do to people, right?
Yes, exactly. You know, the whole issue of correlation, as they call it, comes up. In other words, you line up many cases of babies with birth defects and you say, for starters, okay, in how many of these cases can we find the Zika virus? Well, right from the beginning in Brazil, where the whole so-called explosion happened, the researchers were saying, wait a minute, before you jump the gun here, we are not finding the Zika in the overwhelming majority of the cases of this birth defect. And that story has continued to hold.
Wow.
In fact, in the country of Colombia, there have been many, many cases of so-called Zika discovered in women, pregnant women, and virtually no cases at all that correlate that with microcephaly. So the correlation doesn't stand up. The evidence absolutely does not stand up. It's a promoted story. And I've been down this road before with other so-called epidemics like swine flu and so forth and SARS, where, again, the evidence was not only thin, it should have driven the original researchers back to the drawing board. They should have said, hey, you know, this is not it, this virus that we're touting here. We can't find it most of the time in the people that we're saying have this disease or condition, whatever it is. So we have to start over. But they don't.
Well, and I remember, John, when we were chatting about SARS and about the swine flu seven years ago. I mean, all this hype, they kept saying it was going to become a pandemic. They scared the living daylights out of people. And then they fizzled away.
Exactly. They fizzled away. And in fact, in the case of swine flu, Cheryl Atkinson, who at the time was a star investigative reporter for CBS, exposed the fact that the Centers for Disease Control, at the height of the so-called epidemic, stopped counting the number of cases in America. And the real reason was because the overwhelming number of blood samples from these patients sent to labs were coming back with no trace of swine flu or any other kind of flu at all. They had just tremendous egg on their faces over there at the CDC. And that story was published on the CBS News website, and then came a wrestling match to try to get it onto the nightly news broadcast, the national news. It was blocked. It was blocked again, and the story eventually sank like a stone. I interviewed Cheryl about that, and she said, you know, it was quite an episode that she was trying to get this wider coverage, and the people at CBS News said, no, 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 that's the end of this. We're not going any further with this.
This birth defect, microcephaly, where does it come from?
Well, that is the issue, because Zika has been completely discredited. There is no evidence for it, so then we have to see, okay.
I mean, the birth defect is happening, right?
Birth defect is happening, although in Brazil, where all of this hysteria started, it appears that it has subsided, diminished considerably. So now one has to question, were the original reports correct? Was it really spiking? Were there huge numbers of cases of microcephaly in Brazil to begin with? More than there had been before. And the further you dig into it, you see that the reporting on the numbers of cases is very spotty. It was extremely spotty before 2014. So we really have nothing to compare it to. In America, for example, you get a whole variety of estimates of how many cases there are in America if you look in the medical literature. Some reports say 1,500 a year, others say 25,000 cases a year. And this is going back in history, before anybody was talking about Zika. So it turns out that a severe malnutrition in the mother is a cause that's recognized in the medical literature. and of course pesticides.
Was she smoking? Was she taking drugs?
Yes.
All those things.
All of those things. The usual suspects, you know. And then we come to the pesticides, because it was discovered, for example, in Brazil, that government authorities were dumping what they called a larvicide to kill mosquitoes. This is a pesticide in the water supplies all over the place and not telling the people. And a doctor's group in Brazil spoke out against this and said, this is causing birth defects and it has to stop. And the government authorities reacted and said that they were going to stop it. So all of a sudden you had a real cause, you know, something that really could cause birth defects in babies. And the spraying campaign that's been going on in Miami.
Oh, my God. I saw a video news clip of them spraying all over the place. And the first thing I thought of, John, was that, sure, it may kill mosquitoes, but that's in the air, and people are breathing that stuff.
That's right. It's called NALID, and it's from a class of compounds called organophosphates. You can read up on these and your listeners and see how dangerous these pesticides are. They can and do cause birth defects. So here you have this insane situation of wrongly accusing a virus for causing birth defects, saying it's carried by a mosquito, saying we have to kill the mosquitoes, then using a chemical to do that can cause birth defects. Madness.
What do you think is the purpose of promoting these pandemics, these epidemics, to scare people? What are they trying to do? To get vaccines and have people go and get them?
Absolutely. That's one of the pieces on the agenda. To get people to be scared, to be frightened, to go get the vaccine for that particular a virus or whatever it is.
Or a flu shot or something like that.
Yeah, and in general, beyond that, to be compliant. In other words, to be scared so that if the CDC says, look, you have to get the full range of vaccines your child has to protect him or her. Well, after 8 or 10 of these dud epidemics where the public is frightened and frightened time and time again, it begins to have a hypnotic effect.
Isn't it like terrorism?
Yeah, it's exactly like terrorism. You induce the fear, you bring in the solution, and this, I believe, is how it happened, really, that the legislators up in Sacramento in the state of California and the public, by and large, in California were softened up so that they could pass a mandatory law for vaccinating all school children in California.
Well, according to a new set of CDC rules, doesn't the government now have the right to detain and quarantine Americans? Can they do that?
Yeah, this is a big one. This is a big one.
Here we go.
August 15th, in the Federal Register, Rules for Control of Communicable Diseases. It's a very long document. And these are rules that the Centers for Disease Control intends to enforce somewhere in the next several months, unless there is a huge outcry. They're talking about, quote, police powers, the ability to detain and quarantine anyone in the United States who is traveling between states if they appear to have a communicable disease that could, quote, impact human health. Wow. Well, now they're talking about, first of all, a detention, which means anywhere, airports, train stations, on the road, it doesn't matter where, if some public health officer or even a policeman or who knows who, an official, looks at a person and says, well, I don't know, a little cough, a little, maybe a little fever, we need to detain this person, examine them, decide if they have some sort of illness. And in this horrendous document, they talk about something that they are calling pre-communicable stage of the disease.
What is that?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. This is like Orwellian speak here, right? You are pre-communicable. This means you might have a disease, you may not have the symptoms, but you know, it's a stage from a time when you may have come in contact with somebody who did have a communicable disease. In other words, it's so loosely defined, it could take in anybody who could be detained and then quarantined if a decision was made that, yes, it looks like you are ill with a disease. And during the quarantine period, first of all, you can't walk away from this.
You can't refuse it, can you?
You can't refuse it. No lawyer, no anything. They can medically treat you during the detention period, which means...
with anything they want?
Exactly. Drugs, vaccines. One of the first questions, you know, I would assume they would ask somebody is, well, are you up on your entire CDC schedule of vaccines? Well, no. The last time I was vaccinated, I was 25. Okay, well, we're going to give you all the vaccines. Nothing you could do.
I mean, what do they have you do? Tied down?
If necessary, under those conditions. I mean, you can't refuse.
Duct tape? Jeez.
You know, whatever. Whatever they want to do is really the answer to that question. So this is flying under the radar here, these new rules that the CDC is forming up here. And I would say this is one of the outcomes of what you and I have talked about several times over the years, these dud epidemics that condition the public to accept all medical orders and fear hysteria. Now they come in behind that and say, well, look, you know, we must protect everybody. So if we think you might have a disease that could impact human health, well, we just could, you know, put you away somewhere and treat you. And then when we release you, here's the capper on this whole thing. In the rules, it says that person can now be electronically surveyed and tracked, even to the point of wearing ankle bracelets.
Or one day they'll chip them, John.
Yeah, that would be the easy thing. Sure. So, you know, this is Orwellian medical police state type stuff. It's all being framed under we love you and we want to protect you and all of the usual kind of lingo. But there it is when you strip it apart and you see what's really in this document that very few people know about. It's in the Federal Register. There's a public comment period to the CDC that ends on October 14th. And after that, they can simply go ahead and say this is now federal law.
Tell me about whistleblower William Thompson.
Ah, yes, William Thompson.
A hero?
I wouldn't say so, no. A confessed criminal, yes.
Ah.
He came out of the darkness and said that he and his colleagues at the CDC had lied, cheated, and cooked a study in 2004 that exonerated the MMR vaccine, measles, mumps, rubella, and said has no connection whatsoever to autism. And Thompson, who's a longtime researcher at the CDC, said, that's a lie. We lied. I and my co-authors all lied. We brought a big garbage can into an office. This is him talking.
Mm-hmm.
We threw documents and information, data, that we didn't want in the study into the garbage can and made it look as if that vaccine had no connection to autism.
Jeez.
When in fact it does. He published this statement on his lawyer's website, Rick Morgan, in 2014, and he said he would never talk to reporters, but he would testify if there were a congressional hearing.
What made him decide to go public like that?
Yeah, well, there were some phone calls, George, that were taped in which he expressed his guilt, shame, remorse. You could see he was really conscience-stricken because he had been covering this up for all these years. He spoke to two men, Brian Hooker, Andrew Wakefield. The audio was there for anybody to listen to. He was in a corner. What is he going to do? So I assume that after consulting with his lawyer and possibly the CDC, because he still works there. That's just boggling. he decided this was the best route to take. And he's remained in the shadows after that. He's talked with Congressman Bill Posey, who is trying to get a congressional hearing together to subpoena Thompson under oath, but not any kind of traction on that so far. This is all the subject of the documentary Vaxxed.
That's right.
And it's having an enormous
That is very effect. Controversial, right?
In fact, I just got an email today that some theater in Australia has banned it from showing, which only increases the number of people that want to see it. So it always backfires. But yeah, very controversial. I think it's a marvelous film. It exposes this very incident with William Thompson and the CDC so that anybody can hear the audio tapes of the phone calls and what they mean. This is a man who, if he never fessed up, would be considered a major CDC vaccine researcher for a long period of time, just like a bunch of other guys mm-hmm. in the CDC.
Now, I'm sure, John, that there are some people in the CDC who are well-intentioned, who care about people. So what's the CDC's motive for things like this?
Well, yes, I would say there are some well-intentioned people there. But at the same time, the CDC functions as a PR agency for the pharmaceutical industry, especially in the area of vaccines.
With the appearance of solidness and ethics.
Yes. And they buy an enormous amount of vaccines from vaccine manufacturers.
Right.
So, you know, it doesn't take a genius to figure out, let's see, they're doing studies on the safety and efficacy of vaccines, and they're buying huge amounts of vaccines. So are they going to publish articles that expose vaccines as unsafe and ineffective while they're spending billions of dollars buying vaccines? This is a case of institutional corruption, and it entraps a number of people who work for them, who find out maybe too late what's really going on. Some people never find out. They just kind of keep their nose to the grindstone there and say to themselves, I'm doing good work for a good reason. The usual suspects of all levels. But behind that all, the institution itself is completely biased against science from the get-go, and they are operating to promote the use of vaccines and medical drugs.
Kind of scary, isn't it?
Yeah, it's been scary for a long time. You know, I've been dealing with these people for decades in various ways. This one story pops up, another story pops up, a scandal about a vaccine, about a medical drug, about the CDC not reporting, for example, in that swine flu dud epidemic, the fact that they had stopped counting cases. This is a very corrupt agency at its roots and foundation. And people are more aware now than ever, I would say, largely because of what they call the alternative press, but not enough.
No. Not enough at all. John, we're going to come back. I want to talk a little bit more about that California law, about the mandatory vaccines, what happens with exemptions. It's an amazing story, and we'll take phone calls with you next on Coast to Coast AM.